From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy. This week, we're broadcasting from the studios of the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C.
Senate Democrats failed in a bid to repeal the ban on gays serving openly in the military.
The yeas are 57. The nays are 40. The motion is not agreed to.
So that's the motion to begin debate on the 2011 Defense Authorization Bill with language in it repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Don't ask, don't tell. It's the 17-year-old Clinton-era policy on gays and lesbians in the military. After lengthy hearings and much debate, it doesn't appear that the lame duck Congress will be acting on repeal after all. How sad. But the matter's not going away, and it touches on many issues that are important to those of us concerned with religious and individual liberty. We're going to get three perspectives on the debate, going deeper than the headlines, to explore the personal experiences of one gay soldier. Don't miss this one. And then we'll look at the recently revived argument regarding some military chaplains' fears on how a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell might affect their careers. At the end of every show, as you know, we invite you to visit our website, stateofbelief.com, and contact us with questions, comments, and feedback. Well, it's time for us to include more of your voice in this conversation. Later in today's show, we'll address a question recently emailed to us by a listener in Idaho. It has to do with prayer at public meetings. But I'd like for you to make a note of one other way to reach us at State of Belief. That's the State of Belief listener line. Use it whenever you're moved to do so. Here's the number, 202-238-3291. I give it to you again, 202-238-3291. We want to hear from you. Whether you have feedback on a show segment, an idea for a future show, or a question you'd like for us to answer on the air, that number and other contact information can also be found at stateofbelief.com. With the ongoing discussions of the impact of repealing the U.S. military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, a new aspect has emerged that we find particularly relevant. The effect of repeal on religious liberty and constitutional rights. This matter has been raised by a group of retired military chaplains. But it's not just repeal of the policy, but also its legacy that deserves to be looked at through this lens. Joining me right now is Jeanette Coleman, who brings a very personal perspective to this issue. We're not talking theory here. We're talking personal experience. Jeanette proudly served her country for 14 years in the Army, keeping the truth of her homosexuality quiet the whole time. Jeanette served in Operation Desert Storm in the Gulf and received commendations for her service. She's also a devout person of faith, and hers is a fascinating and heartbreaking story. Jeanette, thanks for your service, and thank you for joining us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you.
You are a newlywed and a mom, so my guess is your life is pretty full right now.
It is, yes.
But you think this is important, and so you have joined other veterans like Lieutenant Dan Choi to fight for repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, going so far as to re-enlist. This is important to you, isn't it?
It's very important. I mean, hiding who you are, the Army teaches you to be open and honest and be yourself. But yet, if you're a member of the LGBTQ community, you're told to keep it silent. So, in other words, you can't be yourself.
Yeah. It's a strange phenomenon that a part of our government that puts such a stress on integrity, in this instance, is wanting to push integrity aside and say, don't tell us the truth.
Exactly. I mean, if they want us to be full of integrity, then they should let us be who we are and be open about who we are. We're people who just happen to love someone of the same sex but still want to serve our country, and we have to live our lives just like everyone else.
Yeah. Jeanette, I want to have you talk for just a little bit about how you were outed as a lesbian and how that led to your discharge. What happened?
Well, an ex-girlfriend of mine wanted to get back together with me, and I told her no because it didn't work the first time. It's not going to work the second time. So she decided to give my commander proof of my homosexuality, mm-hmm. and they started my discharge immediately.
The commander let you know that, or your former girlfriend?
Yes, my commander did.
Commander let you know it. Mm-hmm. How did you respond when he told you what was going to happen?
I told him it's not fair. I've served this country proudly for 14 years. I did my job, and I did my job to the best of anyone's ability. And since my job, I had no reprimand, I didn't see what the problem was, because what I do at home is no one's business.
Was the action that your former girlfriend took considered commendable or reprehensible by those around you?
By the guys that I work with daily, it was irrehensible. They didn't understand why. They didn't believe it. They wanted me there. They had no problem with me being who I am.
Uh-huh.
They knew and didn't care.
Yeah. And they knew before you told them, right?
Way before. The guys that I work with on a daily basis knew way before.
Sure.
They were more like friends than family.
Yeah. And so it was not a problem with them?
No, not with my fellow service members,
yeah.
Just my commander.
As a practicing Christian and also secretly homosexual, what kind of experiences did you have with military chaplains during your service?
When they didn't know, there was no problem. But when they found out, their only concern was that my mental stability, after finding out that living my dream was being smashed, how was my mental stability going to be? And how was my faith?
And is that because they knew how committed you were, how devoted you were to military service, or did they think that your homosexuality had damaged your mind?
It was my how special the military was to me, how much it meant to me to do so. I mean, my father served for 20 years.
Yeah.
Most of my family served for 20 years, and this was just my dream since birth, and it was being taken.
So you didn't have a sense that, at least with the chaplains with whom you related, they were very interested in exposing your homosexuality?
They didn't care whether I was gay or not. It wasn't a problem for them. What they were worried about was just me and how I was going to be being put out of the military, which is the only life I've ever known. The chaplains who worked with me and kept me from going crazy, I love them. I say nothing evil about them. They were there for me and my faith and helped me pray to keep my mind straight.
Well, that's so important to remember, particularly in the context of this conversation. So given that experience, how do you feel when you hear retired military chaplains making the charge that a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell would infringe on their religious liberty and free speech rights?
It's ridiculous to me. It's ridiculous because the chaplains that I worked with were so loving and caring and concerned about just me, not about my lifestyle, just me, that I don't think that it's a problem for the chaplains that are there now.
Well, you know, reports and studies are one thing, but what else do you think our listeners should know based on your experiences over 14 years? What else should our listeners know about military service under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy?
That we, you know, constantly are living in fear of losing our job or being fired just because of our lifestyle. You know, we're proud to be doing the job, and we want to make sure that they have the right to their belief, be it the same or different from us,
mm-hmm.
just as much as we have the right to ours.
What did your family say?
It hurt my father. I mean, he was proud of me. He knew that this was my dream, and he thought, wow, my daughter's following in my footsteps. He was happy. And then when he found out, it hurt because he knew I did my job, and he knew that's all I've ever wanted.
Mm-hmm.
He said he served with several people that he knew be gay. And he didn't care. Just as long as they could do their job, he didn't care.
Jeanette, tell me about this idea of re-enlisting.
Well, I had a friend who was a recruiter and had a listing of codes and what the codes meant for discharge. And there was a one-letter difference in my discharge, which meant that the military made a mistake and did not put me out as being a homosexual. So I said, okay, well, they know I'm gay, but they made a mistake on paper, so I'm going to go back in just to prove to them that it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to find the paperwork, and the same recruiters that put Lieutenant Dan Choi out and told them that he could not serve, they would not take his paperwork, are the same recruiters that told me I can go back in. And they're working on the paperwork to get me in now.
Now?
Now.
So it looks like it may happen?
Oh, it's going to happen. The only thing I have to do is pass a physical fitness test, and I can go.
I don't know anything to say about that, except that sounds like hypocrisy on the part of the military.
Exactly, and that's why I did it. I wanted to show people that the military, they make the mistakes, and if they're willing to take me back as a known, as an out lesbian,
mm-hmm.
who's married to a woman with
mm-hmm.
children,
mm-hmm.
then they should be able to take all of us.
Sure.
But and I'm doing it for everybody else who's out there who wants to join and just too afraid to.
Jeanette, imagine this. Imagine you've got 1 minute with President Obama. What do you say to him?
Stop all the bull. Stop. Just, no, do what you know is right. You said you want to help us. You said you want to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Push it. Get it through. Let us serve. The more of us you let serve, the more forces you have to protect this country.
I tell you what, Jeanette, if there's any way in the world I could do it, I'd get you in his office. That's it is a powerful message that you're carrying, and you have earned the right to carry it by sacrificing something that's important to you and then continuing to work to see that others don't get the same kind of thing happening to them. Jeanette Coleman is a Desert Storm veteran who was discharged from the Army under Don't Ask, Don't Tell after 14 years of service, now having reapplied and anticipating again being a part of the vocation in life to which she feels committed. Jeanette, thank you so much for sharing your story and your perspectives with us today on State of Belief Radio.
You're welcome. Thank you for helping us get the message out.
Still ahead on this week's show, two more perspectives on repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We'll address the free speech and religious liberty issues raised by some military chaplains in the aftermath of the Senate hearings, talking with attorney and veteran Arthur Schultz, who represents the International Conference of Evangelical Chaplain Endorsers. And then we'll pose the same questions to Mark Palavin, Associate Director of the Religious Action Center of Reformed Judaism, an organization that has come out strongly in support of repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everybody. I'm Welton Gaddy. With the release of the Pentagon's exhaustive study on the potential impact of repealing the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on homosexuals in the military, and the subsequent Senate committee hearings, predictable arguments are being made now on both sides of the debate. Now, we're not qualified at State of Belief to address most of those arguments in a substantial way, but there is one discussion that addresses religious liberty directly. Back in the spring, a number of retired military chaplains signed a letter warning of dire consequences to the freedom of speech of active military chaplains and expressing concern that a number of those chaplains may well leave their posts if Don't Ask, Don't Tell were to be repealed. The document was signed by 65 retired chaplains purporting to speak on behalf of the roughly 3,000 active duty chaplains. Arthur Schultz is an attorney who represents the International Conference of Evangelical Chaplain Endorsers, one of the religious groups that military counts on to endorse clergy for military chaplain duty. He's also a Vietnam veteran, and we wanted to ask him about the religious liberty and constitutional issues raised by the retired chaplains. Arthur Schultz, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I want to thank you for addressing this subject.
Well, you're very welcome. Let's just jump right in. Why the emphasis on chaplains' rights?
Because chaplains exercise their ministry and their First Amendment rights through speech. And the problem is that in the military services, you cannot have dissension over important issues. For instance, we don't have the freedom to talk about whether or not drug abuse is a good thing or whether adultery is a good thing. The Army addresses those things with policies. Mm-hmm. And if you happen to have read the DOD report, it said, gee, these chaplains don't have any real concerns because they can be addressed through existing regulations, but we will insist on enforcement of our equal respect policies. Mm-hmm. Therein lies the question. Their report is, in my view, disingenuous and misleading. Technically, it is correct that they cannot affect what you believe or your values. Those are internal. But how you exercise your religion is another issue, and they can regulate that, and they will. Mutual respect means you can't speak ill of someone. Mm-hmm. The problem is, if you're an evangelical chaplain, like the ones we represent, Scripture has foreclosed the debate on whether homosexuality is a good thing. Mm-hmm. In fact, it says, and I'm somewhat paraphrasing it, those who practice this bear in their body the results of their sin. Mm-hmm. If you look at what the medical science, the health science, social science say about homosexuality, it is not a healthy or safe lifestyle.
Okay, I don't really want to debate homosexuality.
Yeah, but that's my point, though, that when somebody comes to a chaplain and says, well, chaplain, what do you think about this issue? Mm-hmm. Or I'm being hit upon by somebody who wants mm-hmm. me to do this. What do you think? He has an obligation as a representative of his faith group to say, well, the Scripture says it's sin. And you can look at the evidence, and if he were to cite the evidence to say that mm-hmm. why this is, mm-hmm. many people could consider that hate speech or speaking disrespectful. So there you get into a restriction.
We've got to take a break right now. I hate to do it, but we're coming right back, and we'll talk some more in just a minute. This is State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Welcome back, everybody. This is State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. My guest is Arthur Schultz, who represents the International Conference of Evangelical Chaplain Endorsers. Well, now, Arthur, aren't there almost daily kinds of challenges for chaplains in which there are disagreements over specific doctrines in one religion as opposed to another, or you have, for example, a chaplain approached by a soldier dealing with contraception or divorce, which some would consider evil sin, others would not, or a Protestant chaplain called upon to advise a Muslim soldier. Aren't there already long-established mechanisms for addressing these kinds of interreligious disparities in a respectful way?
The answer is yes and no. If a Muslim comes to you for a question about something that relates to his faith, your job as a chaplain is to find him someone that can speak to his specific issue. Typically, the chaplain would say, well, I can only address that from my religious background. And then he would try and see if that's suitable. If not, then his obligation is to find a person who could do that.
Say you're a chaplain and a soldier who's gay or lesbian comes to you and says, chaplain, we're just about to go in battle. I am terrified. Can you give me some religious assurance that will help me fight on behalf of my country? Can a chaplain not do that without talking about homosexuality?
Well, that's a question, is not whether or not he knows of that, because if you're an evangelical chaplain, the scripture doesn't leave it open to debate. Now, he can refer to somebody that might, if that. See, there's the
problem. But you couldn't give that person religious counsel because of their sexual orientation.
I'm not sure I understand your question. Well, if you're asking me to say, I know what scripture says, that those who practice these things cannot share in the kingdom of God, which is 1 Corinthians 6.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about someone coming saying, I want you to discuss homosexuality with me. I'm saying the person comes, perhaps they say, I am a gay man, I'm a lesbian woman, and I'm going into battle, and I am scared of the battlefield. I believe in what we're doing, but I've got all these anxieties. Can you give me some counsel about God's love or God's strength that will help me in battle?
I think you could probably say to him, listen, we have a God that loves you, and so you need to see if you can connect with him. And you're asking me, obviously I'm not a chaplain, but I've been a troop commander, and you have those same kinds of issues.
Right.
How is it that you motivate people to keep their eye on what it is they're doing? But I will give you an example of how this will be a real problem for some people.
Okay,
I know a chaplain who arrived at Fort Carson after the unit came back from Iraq, had a lot of drug and alcohol problems. They were chaptering people out, meaning they were discharging them. Soldier comes up to him in the process and stops to talk to him. The chaplain says, son or soldier, your problem is sin. The answer to sin is Jesus Christ. The guy listened to him. All of a sudden, he had what we would refer to as a boarding and experience. The next day, there's a line out the door for that chaplain because that guy went to his friends and said, I just found somebody that can teach me how to have peace with God. And so I will tell you that while you would think, gee, that's a great thing. People are coming. They're getting their lives together, as only God can do. He can root out all of the stuff. He was opposed by his senior brigade chaplain, who thought, gee, we should let the psychologists deal with that, or the psychobabble, as they call it. You know, deal with those, the secularists, the counselors. There are people that will look at if a person who wants to have peace, I mean, the issue is not just am I going to go into battle fighting for my country. For many soldiers, not all, but some, it's how can I have peace? How can I have that internal peace?
I understand.
And that gets into the spiritual issue, and therein lies the problem.
I've been talking with Arthur Schultz, a Vietnam veteran and an attorney who today represents the International Conference of Evangelical Chaplain Endorsers, a group at the forefront of opposing the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Mr. Schultz, I thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
Coming up next, another take on the issue of religious liberty in the military. We'll talk to Mark Palavin, Associate Director of the Religious Action Center of Reformed Judaism, an organization that has come out strongly in support of repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. This is State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody, to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. Because the objection to repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell by conservative military chaplains, as you've heard, is based on a legal interpretation of constitutional rights, specifically the chaplain's constitutional rights, as well as other legal concepts, I wanted to get the perspective of a legal expert who supports repeal. It's a complex issue, but sometimes that doesn't preclude a simple solution. Mark Palavin is an attorney who is the Associate Director of the Commission on Social Action of Reformed Judaism. He's also the Associate Director of the Religious Action Center of Reformed Judaism, the RAC, an organization that has come out strongly in support of repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Mark, when you hear conservative military chaplains object to repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell on the basis of religious liberty and First Amendment grounds, what's your reaction?
I think my first reaction is that I just don't get it. You know, clearly chaplains, military chaplains, have to live with a wide variety of religious beliefs, religious practices in the service as it is. You know, they have to minister and find their way to support people who have very different views, people who believe, you know, as the report, the Pentagon report says, people who believe in abortion and people who believe that it's murder, people who believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and people who don't. I think the job of a military chaplain is to figure out how to most appropriately minister to people with a wide array of views.
Okay, let me just be very succinct and blunt so there's no misunderstanding about this. Is religious freedom at stake if there is a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Absolutely not. You know, not from any perspective, not from the perspective of the individuals who are serving their country, not from the perspective of the military chaplains who are also, of course, serving. There is no, say, First Amendment right to be a military chaplain. If someone finds that they can't in good conscience serve for whatever reason, then they shouldn't serve. But I don't understand how people argue that there's a threat to religious freedom, a threat to religious liberty, by allowing people to be themselves while serving their country.
Let's talk about it another way for a second. Are there risks beyond the issue of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, when religious leaders begin to focus not on the rights and needs of their congregants, but on their own rights and perceived vulnerabilities? In other words, is there a downside because of what's happening with these chaplains making that argument?
I think that's a really interesting question, Weldon. You know, military chaplains have a very difficult job. They have two different jobs. First, of course, they're charged with ministering to those of their own flock, Catholics to Catholics, Lutherans to Lutherans. But more than that, they're also charged with providing religious support to service members of all faiths and in making sure that they're able to access what they need in order to practice their faith. And I think that when the chaplains begin putting themselves first rather than putting the service members who they're serving first, then you begin to distort the entire purpose of having military chaplains.
We focus here at the Interfaith Alliance, and I know you do at the RAC as well, the Religious Action Center for Reform Judaism, on the intersection of religion and politics. Are there other legal issues that are raised by this argument defending chaplains' rights? And for example, what other very contentious subjects could be argued the same way they're trying to argue on Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Well, the most obvious one is reproductive rights. You know, are chaplains going to claim a military, a religious liberty right not to counsel soldiers who find themselves in a situation where they're thinking about what their choices are resulting from an unwanted pregnancy? You know, clearly they have a First Amendment right to give the kind of advice that they feel they need to give. On the other hand, what's so interesting about this example is not that they're complaining, not that they're concerned they won't be able to give the advice that they want, but merely that they don't want to have the discussion. They don't want, you know, that they would be somehow compromised by having to counsel people who are openly gay or lesbian at all.
Yeah, I have to say, Mark, I wanted your perspective particularly because you're a lawyer as well as a person of religious conviction. I can't, as a non-lawyer and a person with religious convictions myself, I can't understand someone wanting to volunteer for the chaplaincy, knowing the diversity of the military, who's not willing to talk across lines on ethical issues.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, military chaplains have an incredibly difficult job. And that challenge of both serving their own parishioners and serving the military as a whole is a very difficult one, and clearly it's not for everyone. You know, it's not a choice that every clergy member would make. I think that those who do make it have to understand that that's part of the deal, and that being part of a military hierarchy is part of the deal.
So I come to you as a person of religious conviction and a member, well, I might as well be in the Marines, so this is an imaginary situation. And I say, look, Mark, you're a lawyer. I am extremely upset with this idea of getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, because I do believe that homosexuality is a sin and that it can condemn a person to eternal punishment. Tell me, as a lawyer, how I ought to look at this.
Well, I think then that my job would be to steer that person towards someone else in the military hierarchy who could provide the kind of help that they need. You know, the military chaplains are quite accustomed to referring people one to the other. It is no small part of their job if you're a Catholic chaplain and a Jewish parishioner approaches you to figure out what you need to do in order to get him the support that he needs. And I think that they have to find a way within the military framework to provide support to all soldiers.
Mark, are there any other legal or constitutional questions regarding the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell that you think we ought to keep in mind and look at carefully?
Well, the one thing that hasn't been talked about very much, you know, we've talked a lot, including in this conversation, about whether or not religious liberty rights of military chaplains are implicated here. There are also religious liberty rights of the service members who are serving, of the gay and lesbian members of the Army, the Air Force, the Marines, who believe that they have every right to be themselves, to be who it is that God created them to be within the context of the military. And I think that they have an argument to make as well.
Sure, sure. Mark, is there anything I haven't asked you about this that you need to talk about to help our listeners understand better what's going on?
The dramatic change in the chaplaincy corps over the past generation. And a couple of things have happened, not the least of them, is that the chaplaincy has become less appealing for folks other than the most fundamentalist denominations. And the people who are choosing now to be military chaplains have a much more conservative cast than the overall religious makeup of the country as a whole. And I think that's a real challenge to those of us with progressive religious values, to find ways to inspire and support our own clergy and going to the military chaplaincy.
Well, you've done what we turned to you to do and knew you could do, and I really do appreciate you taking the time on the road to make this possible. That's very helpful.
Happy to talk to you anytime, Wilton.
Now, wait just a minute. I want you to know that my producer, Ray, is waving at me and getting my attention. Ray, what do you want?
Well, I don't mean to interrupt the show, but we've got a listener question. I wrote back, I said I'd ask you this question on the show, so I wanted to ask you this question.
Okay.
Here's the email. Has the Interfaith Alliance taken a position on the topic of having invocations before public meetings? Our city accepts invocations from guests regardless of their religious or non-religious affiliation. From my research, says the letter, it seems that the courts are making distinctions more from a political than a legal perspective, but the distinctions seem to favor our city's practice. Because I respect your work, I am curious for your thoughts. And this is from Idaho.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the writer for respecting our work and taking time to ask us a question. We hope more people will do that. Secondly, I think about Idaho as the source of the letter, and I remember the first time I went out to Idaho to speak to a group. It's been several years ago, and someone told me before I did the lecture, just remember you're in Idaho. Go easy on the Christian Coalition because they're a moderate group out here. Idaho can be a tough place, especially for religious freedom. Interfaith Alliance favors separation between the institutions of religion and the institutions of government. We do not see any reason why government institutions should be a venue for practicing the rituals or giving the witness of anyone's particular religious faith. My own experience with public prayer at public events has been that it is an in-your-face form of proselytization disguised as the piety of prayer, but the disguise is not a very good one. I think legality, the issue is in flux. We have seen some state legislatures challenged that began their sessions with prayer. Some have been instructed to have the prayers not use, if they're Christian, the phrase in Jesus' name at the end. That caused even more controversy. But there are many city councils and school boards that continue to open their sessions with prayer. Some, like our listener said, using prayer from a variety of traditions, some of them much more homogeneous and focusing primarily on the Christian tradition. Let me just make a suggestion. I wish that we could just quit talking about this and focus on government bodies doing what government bodies ought to do, and that is the practice of good government. Whether it is a school board or a state legislature or the National Congress, think about it this way. The quality of the morality of that group and the level of religion apparent in that group is going to be established much more by the work of the government entity than by the words of whoever does the prayer at the beginning of the program. The greatest religious acts in the history of the world have not always been accompanied by the vocabulary of faith. Why don't we quit talking about who's going to pray, what we're going to pray, and do our work of helping kids, helping the government, promoting the public welfare in such a manner that it seems like prayer and is a religious act because people are helped. Thanks for asking. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Visit us online at stateofbelief.com to find out more about the show. Listen to the show archives and sign up for our podcast. Tell us what you like about the program and what you'd like to hear in the future, and I'd even say tell us what you don't like about the program. Contact information is available at stateofbelief.com, including the listener line. You remember the number? 202-238-3291. Please tell a friend about our show and encourage them to listen also. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. There has not been a time in recent history when the cause of religious liberty needed more support than right now. Join us today. Give yourself a present during this holiday season and become a member of Interfaith Alliance. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. And we'll be right back here on State of Belief Radio next week. More stories from the intersection of religion and politics. Probably some surprises, maybe a debate or two. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man.